Welcome back as we continue our journey into looking at everything that Jesus said and everything that Jesus did. We're now up to John chapter 9, but we've just come out of a fairly tough interaction in the temple precinct in Jerusalem between the religious elite and Jesus. He's made some astounding claims again. He's saying, as it comes to sin, you're still stuck. You're still trapped. You're still practicing. Knowing Abraham, that's not doing it for you. You're actually going to need to come to me, and I'm going to be able to set you free. This was a very offensive thing for them to hear. Jesus pushed on in chapter 8, claimed that the reason for that is because he and the Father were one. The great I Am that they knew, their God, Jesus had the same title. They made their escape from the stone-throwing hands of the religious elite and removed themselves from the temple precinct. And we're going to pick up the story now. Sometime later, they're still in downtown Jerusalem, enemy HQ, but we don't quite know when. There's still some months to go before Jesus is due to be arrested and crucified. Jesus finds another work of his Father to do. A man born blind. As he, Jesus, passed by, he saw a man blind from birth. Jesus said that he only ever did what his Father asked him to do and said what his Father asked him to say. So no doubt, Jesus is aware from the Spirit that this is a man who has never seen and that Father wants this man healed. In this story, there's going to be a number of different groups weighing in to this miracle. The disciples who are witnessing it, trying to understand the suffering nature of it, of the blindness. You've got the beggar, the blind man's associates who know him, responding to someone they've known being healed and trying to work out what it means. You've got a group called the Pharisees who pride themselves on being perhaps some of the closest people to God, the most adherent to God's rules, the ones who knew him the most, trying to make sense of what happens to this blind man. And another and final group, which is called the Jews. And they're the ones who are actually not just the Jewish people, but the religious elite, the rulers of the synagogues, the ones who decide how and when worship happens, the validity of worship. And they're going to have a chance to respond to this miracle too. Everyone is not the same when it comes to miracles. And they are an amazing divider and an amazing tester of how you see God. As he passed by, he saw a man blind from birth, and his disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned? This man or his parents, that he was born blind?" I don't think that's an unreasonable question for the disciples to ask. Their tradition in the Jewish faith had been always, you know, you obey God and you're obedient, you are blessed. You disobey God, you'll end up being cursed. So that was tradition and doctrine for them. They also had a practical example of this when Jesus healed the paralyzed man and said, "Pick up your mat and walk and sin no more, lest something worse happen." So obviously sin in some way is related to suffering, from tradition, from example, from Jesus. And their assumption was that it was always sin that caused suffering. Well, what did Jesus say to that? Jesus answered, "It was not that this man sinned or his parents, but that the works of God might be displayed in him." Okay. That's a very difficult thing for us to hear. Sometimes suffering is ordained, and it'll be for God to be on display in his amazing ability to overcome suffering and benefit the one who is suffering. This happened for Job. It was the devil's sin, or the devil's will, that Job be destroyed and crushed, and his family killed, his business ruined, his health taken. It wasn't God's will. It wasn't Job's will. It wasn't Job's sin. It was the enemy, the spiritual enemy of all. But God got great glory out of that as Job held on to his Redeemer, held on to his faith, held on to his Father in heaven. I know that my Redeemer lives, and one day he'll walk upon the earth. And here he was, walking on the earth. Suffering was ordained for Jesus, not for his sin, but for others, for mine, for yours. And Jesus received great glory in heaven on his arrival. As he ascended, the trumpet sound, the victory, the angels, the seat next to the Father. Immense glory, but through suffering, not bypassing suffering. That was something that the devil offered in the desert. Just bow down, worship me, avoid the tough stuff, avoid the path that your dad's got for you through suffering, go around suffering. Get the same way, get the same thing. No, this is one of those tough truths that we don't like to hear, but suffering is a pathway. It's a pathway. It's not a detour. That the works of God might be displayed in him. We must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. Night is coming when no one can work. Jesus didn't explain that, but it's possible he was talking about the coming crucifixion in just a few months, and he had to get these jobs done. His Father wanted some signs done clearly. He wanted people to know of his immense power and his great glory and his ability to relieve any illness, any blindness, natural blindness, and ultimately spiritual blindness. Jesus goes on to say, as long as I am in the world, I am the light of the world. It's good to pause there and just see yourself as someone in the crowd listening to Jesus say these things. Did he just say that he's the light of like the world, not like the light of Jerusalem or his family or his workplace? Did he just say that he lights the world? That's a lot. That's a big claim. Easy to read over these things and not feel the weight of what Jesus is saying. He's saying, if there's going to be any understanding of the spiritual realm in this world, it's through me. There is no other source of light to eternity, the realm of the spirit, the reality of the present, the past, and the future. I'm the only one that can shed light on these things. And I'm here. Well, I'd imagine if he'd have said those things, you'd want to walk away and say, he's over the top. Some sort of manic bipolar thing happening. Having like a moment. Well, what did he do? Having said these things, he spit on the ground and made mud with the saliva. Then he anointed the man's eyes with the mud and said to him, go wash in the pool of Siloam, which means sent. So, what did the blind man do? Did he sit there and say, oh no, not another do-gooder who's telling me I can help you, another charlatan, I can fix you. And worse than that, he's just infringed my personal space and shoved stuff on my eyes. I didn't even know where he was. And he's... That was not his response. Jesus said that you can't come to the Father unless the Father is drawing you. So this man, sitting there in his blindness and his darkness and his weakness and his vulnerability, has heard the Father say, listen to this one, listen to this one. And he's complied. No arguing. He would have had to have worked his way down to the pool of Siloam, as he always had, slowly, deliberately, difficultly. Found the pool, gone under and washed, and come back up. Can you imagine what was going on in that boy, in that young man? Never seen. Light. Figures. What do they all mean? I can see. I have been in total darkness all my life. I didn't know light. I didn't know dark. That guy is the light of my eyes. Wow. Jesus not only lit up the guy's eyes, but he lit up his heart. The Father was lighting up this man's heart. He was showing he had spiritual light and natural light. He washed and came back seeing. The neighbours and those who had seen him before as a beggar were saying, is this not the man who used to sit and beg? Some said, it is he. Others said, no, but he's like him. He kept saying, I am the man. I am the man. I'm the man. If something seemingly impossible happens, something extraordinary, there's a battle for belief starts. The people who were familiar with the illness and familiar with him, familiar with his blindness, had a battle in their own minds and own hearts on their hands. This can't be. This just doesn't happen. I must be wrong here somehow. Maybe it's the wrong guy. I don't know what's going on. The one who wasn't in any confusion was the guy he was actually seeing. He had no trouble believing it because he was feeling it and experiencing it. There's nothing like a good experience to help belief. Testimony can help, and there's nothing like a good experience. Some said it is he. Others said no. He kept saying, I am the man. So they said to him, well then, how were your eyes opened? The man called Jesus made mud and anointed my eyes and said to me, go to Siloam and wash. So I went and washed and received my sight. They said to him, where is he? He said, I do not know. So faith is now coming through the one who experienced it and into those who are hearing the testimony. And not just hearing the testimony, they're watching him look. They're looking at new eyes. So they too had something to not just hear but also see. And they brought to the Pharisees the man who had formerly been blind. Okay. So the neighbours had undergone their test and they're coming through in belief that this was an amazing miracle. What about the Pharisees? They brought to the Pharisees the man who had been formerly blind. Now it was a Sabbath day when Jesus made the mud and opened his eyes. Father knew what day of the week it was when he asked Jesus to heal the man from blind from birth. Wasn't an accident. Could have done it on a Thursday, Tuesday. No, it was yet another test for the Pharisees, those who claimed fidelity to the law, those who claimed that they were closest to God and knew him best. So the Pharisees again asked him how he had received his sight. And he said to them, "He put mud on my eyes, and I washed, and I see." Some of the Pharisees said, "This man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath." Distorted doctrine denied their access to the truth. But others said, and that's allos others, not heteros others in the Greek, which would mean others of the same kind, other Pharisees. Others said, "How can a man who is a sinner do such signs?" There's the choice in the group, in the Pharisees group. Is he a sinner, breaking the law of Moses? Or have we got that one wrong, and he's not sinning, and he's from God, and we need to look at the way we're looking at the law? And there was a division among them. They're now arguing as a group. This recalls some of the things Jesus has said in the past that did not come to bring peace, but a sword to divide. So these groups, these Pharisees, so they said again to the blind man, "What do you say about him, since he has opened your eyes?" And he said, "He's a prophet." Okay, so now we're moving on to another group, the Jews, who were the in charge of synagogue, of temple. The Jews did not believe that he had been blind and had received his sight. So their default was to just to deny. No, didn't happen. No, it doesn't happen. Didn't happen. But the crowd, the people who knew him, you know, he's saying it. The people who knew him are saying it. His neighbours are saying it. No. You're going to have a look into it. Call his parents. The Jews did not believe that he had been blind and had received his sight until they called the parents of the man who had received his sight and asked them, "Is this your son, who you say was born blind? How does he now see?" His parents answered, "We know that this is our son and that he was born blind, but how he now sees, we don't know. Nor do we know who opened his eyes. Ask him. He's of age. He'll speak for himself." Why were they so coy? "Surely if this was your son, who was blind from birth, you would be hugging and tears and kissing and celebrating and dancing and throw a party." Look at the intimidation that these Jews have. They're squelching these people's joy. His parents said these things because they feared the Jews, for the Jews had already agreed that if anyone should confess Jesus to be Christ, he was to be put out of the synagogue. You want to celebrate this guy? You want to say this was a thing from God? You're going to lose your community, your friends, your worship. It's going. You sure you want to say this was something from God? You would hope that your religious leaders, your religious elite, would take a good approach to working out the truth of the matter and allowing it to stand. And even if you were uncertain whether it was true or not, that you wouldn't intimidate and you wouldn't throw people out, but you'd sit in the confusion until you were sure. But these guys were just intimidating people and abusing their power. Not a friend of Jesus. So, for the second time, they called the man who had been blind and said to him, "Give glory to God." I presume that this group, there's some Pharisees in there and there's some Jewish rulers in there. We've got these Jewish rulers now saying, carrying on the conversation, and they've called him back. Give glory to God. We know this man is a sinner. I mean, of course he is. I mean, who breaks our rules on the Sabbath? He's sinned against us. We're just God's representatives. He sinned against us. He sinned against God. The blind man, he answered, whether he is a sinner, I do not know. One thing I know, that though I was blind, now I see. The Jews, they said to him, what did he do to you? How did he open your eyes? He answered them, I have told you already, and you would not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciples? Okay. I think he's being a little cheeky there. He knows they're refusing to listen. He knows they're refusing to believe. He knows they're contesting that he's a liar. They didn't take his word for the testimony. They need a cooperation of neighbours. They also need a cooperation of family. That's a pretty tough spot when someone won't take your testimony. So he's probably having a little dig. Do you want to become his disciples? How'd that go? And they reviled him. I imagine there'd be a few choice words and a few choice phrases being exchanged at this point with these heavy-hitting Jewish people, just disgusted at this guy's suggestion that they need to follow Jesus. They reviled him, saying, you are his disciple, but we are disciples of Moses. We know that God has spoken to Moses, but as for this man, we do not know where he comes from. The man answered, why, this is an amazing thing. You do not know where he comes from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners. But if anyone is a worshipper of God and does his will, God listens to him. Never since the world began has it been heard that anyone opened the eyes of a man born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing. Okay, so blind man's come out swinging. You want me to believe he's a sinner? No. 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 He's just made me well. Are you saying that a sinner has caused a sinful act to me where I'm now seeing? What are you saying to me? So how'd the Jews go with that little retort? They answered him, you were born in utter sin. And would you teach us? And they cast him out. It's 180 degrees wrong. Father's looking down, seeing a child suffering for years, 20 years. Can't see, can't work, can't feel useful. All I can do for my work is to try and bring in income by begging for my family. And yet he's remained faithful. He knows his worship. He knows truth. He knows doctrine. And somehow or other he's trusting in God. And God responds. Takes him 20 years or so. God responds. Heals him physically. Now he can work. Feel useful. But more, he's feeling loved. He's feeling connected to his Creator. People come along who are supposed to validate the moving of God, and they say that was not God. That was, we don't know what that was, but that was all a matter of sin. I'm sure that that young man was not convinced by that. It is unfortunate that in many countries, people have told the truth of Jesus. In some churches, people have told the truth of Jesus, that he's the one, the only one, and that we all need to look to God for forgiveness and for repentance. And people have been offended. Pride has been hurt. And people have been killed as martyrs. People have been cast out of places of worship. But Jesus doesn't leave it there. Jesus doesn't leave them alone. Jesus heard that they had cast him out. And having found him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" I think I'd be giving Jesus the biggest hug. Oh, thank you, thank you, thank you. I think that this man probably understood what Jesus was saying when he said the Son of Man. For Jesus, that was his code of saying, there is one coming who rides on the clouds of heaven, whose kingdom knows no end, who will be in charge of the world and all the kingdoms of the world forever and in eternity. The Son of Man mentioned in Daniel chapter 7. Well, I feel confident that Jesus is asking this man, "You heard of him?" The blind man, he answered, "And who is he, sir, that I may believe in him?" Jesus said to him, "You have seen him, and it is he who is speaking to you." Nice touch. Prior to this, all Jesus could have said was, "I'm speaking to you." But now he says, "You're looking at me with those bright new eyes of yours." He said, "Lord, I believe." Believe what? "Lord, I believe that you are the Son of Man, the Eternal One, the one coming from the clouds of heaven to earth to be a ruler forever. I believe it's you." And he worshipped him. We can hardly be surprised that this man is worshipping Jesus. He has not just been physically turned from physical blindness. Jesus is now unveiled something in the spiritual realm. The King of the universe is standing in front of you. The one who was from heaven is here in front of you. So any spiritual blindness that he had was now gone. He was both physically sighted and spiritually sighted and connected to the King. He's got to worship. Jesus didn't stop him worshiping. Jesus did not stop him worshiping. He said, "For judgment I came into this world, that those who do not see may see, and those who see may become blind." It wasn't time for Jesus to enact the final judgment where people are reclothed with new bodies and placed in darkness or light by Jesus. But he's laying down testimony and signs to people which will be used on Judgment Day in his decision. Who gets resurrection to life? Who gets resurrection to judgment? To death, to darkness. He makes an unusual comment about blindness. Some of the Pharisees near him heard these things and said to him, "Are we also blind?" I imagine they're trying to get him to say, "Yeah, you're blind," and they're just going to chortle and chuckle amongst themselves and say, "Look at that. We've got 20/20 vision. We've got 20/20 vision in the natural. We've got 20/20 vision about God. We have the law of Moses. We understand and see clearly, naturally and spiritually. No way, Jesus. No way do we accept any diagnosis from you, the sinner." Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would have no guilt. But now that you say, we see, your guilt remains." At the end of the day, it's not whether we can see physical light. Well, we're stuck with the disease of blindness that matters. What matters is whether we see spiritually or whether we're blind spiritually. That's what matters. There's only one source of sight and light in the spirit realm. It's Jesus. No other figure. Not Moses to these people. Not Muhammad. Not anybody. Jesus is the source of light. Jesus is the source of eternal life. Jesus has just said, "You deny me, you're guilty." They're strong words, they're tough words. And yet they're the words of Jesus. They're sobering words. Okay, so if we just have a quick revisit on this miracle, we can see that miracles don't always cohes. Sometimes they divide. We can see that miracles are a test of belief, a test of our judgmentalness. In this particular case, this was a foreordained miracle, showing firstly that suffering is not always related to sin. Secondly, that nothing is too difficult for God. And thirdly, a sign that without Jesus, we're spiritually blind. Come to the light. How will we all respond to that? That's up for each and every one of us to decide. Well, we'll see you again as we continue on our search for everything that Jesus said and everything that Jesus did in John chapter 10. See you then.